This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your texts to 129090, where standard messaging rates will apply. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at LegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
To talk about the upcoming NHL draft, we're pleased to be joined by Chris Peters of ESPN.com. Chris, good morning. Thank you for giving us your time. How are you on this Saturday morning?
I'm doing great, guys. Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Chris. Likewise, great to talk to you. We know that the draft is coming up in a virtual format. We now know when the draft is going to be, a little less than a month from now. Everyone assumes that we know who's going to be the first overall pick, and that's going to be Alexei Lafreniere going to the New York Rangers after they won the draft lottery. I guess sort of a two-part question. Can you foresee any circumstance where he isn't the first overall pick? And what kind of impact do you think he can make in the NHL next season?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that he'll be the number one pick. I think that, you know, it's all trending in that direction. As good as the other guys are that could potentially challenge him for that, I just think that Lafreniere really separated himself this year. And I mean, I think he's an instant impact player. You know, I think that given his frame, his size, you know, the fact that he has good physical strength, the fact that he engages physically, and could be physically dominant at the junior level, that's a very good sign. Obviously, has the puck skills and the hockey sense and all those things that are super advanced. And, you know, he's older for the draft year, too. I mean, I think that's important to remember as a late birth date. And, you know, he should be physically ahead of a lot of his peers, and he is. And so that should allow him to, you know, to jump into a lineup in New York with the Rangers having the first pick, you know, assuming that they hold on to it, and I do think they will. You know, they've got some talented wings, some really good centers there. I mean, he's got options for where he could play. He doesn't have to be the guy there. They already have that in Artemi Panarin. So, you know, he's what a great guy to learn from too, just a highly skilled player. So yeah, I think that Lafreniere is going to be an absolute, you know, impact rookie and certainly in the mix for the Calder Trophy.
Now, Chris, we want to ask you about some of the other, you know, top five prospects here, and then we want to get into, you know, some of the guys who could be options for the Jets at 10th overall. And, you know, one of the guys I wanted to ask you about is Jamie Drysdale. He's expected to be the first defenseman taken. He might go as high as fourth or fifth overall. You know, some people have compared him to Morgan Riley or Quinn Hughes. What stands out to you about Drysdale's game?
Yeah, well, it's his skating. I mean, I think that he's an elite skater in this draft class among defensemen. And so there's smoothness to it. There's, you know, there's certainly speed, but I think it's his ability to use his edges to cover ground, and the fact that he, you know, takes really good angles on players and both in the offensive zone and the defensive zone. You know, I think his defending is still a work in progress, but what he showed at the World Junior Championship is that, you know, you put him in that role and he adapts, and he was down the lineup to start. And you know, Bowen Byram came down with an illness, I believe, and couldn't play in one of the games. And then, you know, Jamie Drysdale steps up, scores a goal. You know, he's pretty outstanding. And, you know, interestingly enough, I think the consensus is not necessarily that Drysdale will be the first defenseman pick. I don't think there is a consensus anymore, which is really surprising because, you know, Jake Sanderson has entered the conversation. You know, talking to a lot of different scouts, I mean, there are scouts that prefer him over Drysdale because he's a more complete defenseman. But it's, you know, if you would have told us that at the beginning of the draft season, I don't think anybody would have believed you. But that just goes to show how much improvement Jake Sanderson had over the course of the year. So I think you've got two defensemen that likely end up somewhere in the top 10 or just outside of it. So, I mean, it's pretty intriguing to see kind of how that has shifted over time. But no question, you got two guys that I think a lot of people believe will be top pairing defensemen.
Chris, I want to ask you about the Ottawa 67's Marco Rossi. I mean, he's registered 120 points in 56 games for the 67's this past season, is ranked as the sixth best North American skater by NHL Central Scouting. What is your ceiling on? What is your opinion on his ceiling?
You know, I think he's an interesting case. I think there's a lot that we have to learn about, you know, kind of what he looks like at the next level. I think that he did everything he possibly could at the junior level to prove that he could be a dominant player. And now it's just a matter of, you know, he's not going to get a lot bigger. He's pretty strong already, you know, so he'll continue to fill out his frame, but I think he's got such a tremendously strong lower body. You know, I think there are size concerns, especially, you know, I think that's always the case with centers, but as we've seen Braden Point show in this current playoff, you know, like you can be a smaller center and be a force at both ends of the ice and be a star player. And I think that's kind of the model that Marco Rossi is going to have to follow. I think, you know, one of the concerns about him is, you know, he is a good skater. He's not a great skater. I think that, you know, when you are a smaller player, you want to see guys that move a little more quickly. But I mean, you look at the hockey sense, the skills, the ability to make plays. I mean, he just does everything. And you know, his numbers were off the charts this year, and it was outstanding to see him. And I mean, I'm a big believer that he's a top 10 pick. I think he's a guy that should go in that top 10. And will make a team very happy once they have him. But, you know, I think that in terms of ceiling, he's hard to project just because, you know, I think it really depends on where he goes, what they view him like. You know, I think that he could be a center. I think there are teams that think he can't be. I think he could be. You know, it could be if he does go to the wing, you know, I think that that's a fine spot too, just to maximize his offensive potential. But, I mean, the tenacity that he plays with, the fact that he engages physically, his ability to get under players and his lower body strength, I think all allow him to overcome any of the deficiencies that others may see in him.
Chris Peters is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Chris covers the NHL draft and the NHL for ESPN.com. Chris, here in Winnipeg, basically all offseason and really for much of the last, I don't know, 5 years, we've been talking about that search for that second-line center to play behind Mark Scheifele. Jets drafting 10th overall, and we know some of the names, some of the centermen who might be available in and around there. Anton Lundell comes to mind. Connor Zeri comes to mind. You know, do you think that either of these guys, if the Jets were to choose one of them at 10th overall, would be ready to step in to an NHL role next season, or do they need some seasoning still in junior, or in the case of Lundell, back over in Europe or with the AHL?
Yeah, I think Lundell has the best chance because he's played pro for a few years now, and you know, I have him ahead of Zari and his ability to, you know, to what we've seen from him over the last few years is a really mature, efficient player. And I think, you know, his ceiling probably is that number two type center. He doesn't have that super high end skill that I think will translate necessarily to being a top center. But he's just so smart. And I think that the fact that he has that hockey sense that at least suggests that he could potentially play in the NHL as early as next season. I think he is one of the more NHL ready prospects. I think there's still a lot of development to go for him. But you look at what he's doing in Liga over the last few years, his numbers don't necessarily pop out as phenomenal. But I was thinking about this a little bit too in the same context of they're not comparable players, but I think that their draft seasons and the way that they're viewed are similar. But Brady Tkachuk didn't have great numbers in college, but you look and he becomes a high-end, you know, elite top six kind of potential winger with a ceiling and room to grow. I think there was a lot of the similar conversations about his brother Matthew too, and you know, I think I see some of those same complaints. Like Lundell doesn't have a lot of flash, but gosh, he's ever effective. And you know, he played for Finland on their gold medal junior team 2 years ago, wasn't able to play in the last World Juniors because of an injury. And this year he's wearing a letter in Liga as a young man in Finland, in one of the top European leagues. I mean, I think that says a lot about what he is, what he can be. You know, I think that, you know, likely he would stay in Liga for this entire year before potentially moving. So, you know, I think you'd have to kind of see what happens with the NHL season to see if he can jump right in.
Well, Chris, Alexander Holtz, a Swedish right winger, he's a player that, you know, some Jets fans are hoping might slip to the Jets at 10th overall. You know, even though, you know, he could go higher than that, you know, I know the Devils have the 7th overall pick. Some people think, you know, the Devils might take him because, of course, the Devils have, you know, a couple of good young centers in Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier. But when you're talking about Alexander Holt, you know, he's been described in the scouting reports that I've read as the best pure goal scorer in the draft with the best shot in the draft. What would your assessment be of Holt, and do you think he could be around at 10th overall for the Jets? I know it's tough to say, but, you know, do you have him kind of going in that, you know, 7 to 10 range?
Yeah, I do. I think that he very well could be available there. There's certainly the possibility that the Jets the Devils or some other team could take him. He's off to a pretty good start in the preseason. He scored some goals for Djugarden and has been, he's always been a goal scorer. I think that the reason that he could slip beyond, you know, potentially and be available at 10 is, you know, I think that he needs somebody to help him create. He's not a guy that does a lot of play driving on his own. I have seen it at times, and certainly at international events at the U18 level where he's just so much better than a lot of the players, that he's fine. But, you know, I think that he's going to score a lot of his goals on power play. He's going to score a lot kind of from the perimeter. He has the size and strength to get inside more. And I think that there's going to be an interesting debate for teams between him and Jack Quinn in particular, because Jack Quinn does get inside and does create and has that tremendous shot. So I think that those two guys are going to be a real interesting debate for teams who's ahead of who. I think that the Alexander Holt, the interesting thing about him is this: I think we've known about him for so long because he's been at a top level for Sweden. You know, he played in the Hlinka Gretzky Cup at 16 in Edmonton, and he and Lucas Raymond were the two best players for Sweden that entire tournament, even though they were younger than everybody. And I think that that's, you know, we just kind of come to expect that he's going to be a top prospect. And I think that over the year, there have been some guys that have passed him up. And so that's why I think that he very well could be there. I think I still have him as a top 10 prospect. I still think he's very good. I just think that some guys really, you know, progressed more than he has. But I like what I've seen so far in the very early goings of the SHL season and the preseason, and also the U20 Sweden camp that I watched him in. You know, he is an absolute sniper.
You know, Chris, sticking with the Jets and looking at some of the players they could grab, you know, Ville Heinola, Dylan Sandberg, and another left side guy that potentially could be there is Jake Sanderson. You know, he's a son of obviously former NHLer Jeff Sanderson, ranked 8th in TSN's Bob McKenzie's final draft rankings. What type of player would the Jets be getting if they drafted Sanderson with the 10th overall pick?
I mean, I think they're getting a top pairing defenseman. I think he'd be instantly the number one defenseman in the system. I think he might be one of the best defensemen, you know, projection wise, that they have, you know, in their group. I think Jake Sanderson has really popped. And I just had a conversation with a scout about him the other day, and you know, I think he's going to play, you know, 25 minutes a night at the NHL level for a long time. And I see that too. He is an incredibly explosive skater. He is very difficult to beat. I think he's been dogged a little bit because his numbers aren't as impressive, but they're really not that incompatible with Jacob Trouba's. They're a little lower than his at the National Team Development Program, and Trouba played on a much more offensively gifted team than Sanderson did. So I think that that's part of it. You know, that U18 team last year just didn't score a lot of goals, but one of the last events before everything shut down was the U18 Five Nations tournament in the Czech Republic, and Jake Sanderson tied for the tournament lead in scoring, and showed off more of those offensive skills. Like, I think if he's available at 10, that's the pick for me. If he's there, that's the guy I want, because I think that he kind of fills a need. He also has that potential to be a top pairing defenseman, and I think that could potentially be more valuable than a scoring winger. Could potentially be more valuable than a number two center. You know, I think those are the types of things that you talk about in the draft room, and you say, well, is he better? Is he going to be a better player than these guys? And then if he is, I think you take him. And so I don't think he's going to be there based on the conversations I've been having. I think that he's a guy that, as I mentioned, that he's challenging Jamie Drysdale to be the first defenseman off the board. Very fascinating to see, you know, what Ottawa does with their two picks. You know, there are other teams that, you know, have, like Anaheim could certainly use another defenseman in their system. You know, so those are the types of things where maybe he and Drysdale go back to back or go early. But I have really become impressed with Jake Sanderson and everything that he's done. And he was coached the National Team Development Program by Nick Four, who's been there a long time as an assistant coach and runs the defense. And I asked him, like, where he compares to some of the other guys that he's coached, and he said he put him right up there with Charlie McAvoy, right up there with Noah Hanifin and Zach Werenski as among the best that he's worked with in terms of what he thinks he can be at the NHL level. And if that's an option for you, I think you got to be pretty excited about the potential of adding, you know, a potential number one defenseman. And I think that the more and more I watch Jake Sanderson, the more and more I believe that that's what he can be.
Last question for you, Chris. Chris Peters of ESPN.com is joining us on the show to talk about the NHL draft. You know, doing your draft prep and your draft work, I'm sure there's one player that you think is maybe flying a little bit under the radar. Maybe he's going later in the first round and you like him higher, or, you know, maybe he's in the second round and you like him in the first. Who would that player be, and why do you like that player?
Yeah, that's an easy question for me to answer. It's Lukas Reichel from Germany, and he's one of my favorite players in this draft. I think that, you know, the fact that we don't have a ton of high end draft prospects that come out of the German Elite League, although this year we have three potential first rounders from that league, including Tim Stützle and John Jason Paterka. I think that Reichel, you know, I watched some of his games this summer. Germany played, it was on video, of course, but Germany played some pre World Junior preparation games against Switzerland, and I thought he outplayed Stützle and Paterka. There's a high-end skill factor to him. He has great vision. He makes plays in and around the net. You know, at Berlin, he played with, you know, a lot of, you know, older guys, and he was hanging with them and playing a key role. He had 12 goals this season. I think he's got a great release on his shot. It's one of the more underrated skills that, you know, based on scouting reports that I've seen on him. I think that he can be a scorer at the next level. I think he's got some great playmaking skills, and he thinks the game at a really fast pace. And so that's a guy where I've seen him, you know, kind of low 20s, you know, maybe possibly even slipping in the second round. I think that, you know, as I've been building and rebuilding my draft board, he just keeps moving up. So that's the guy that I think, you know, could be a real valuable guy in that mid-range of the first round. I don't think he's in that tier with the, you know, the Holtzes and Raymond and Sanderson and Drysdale and all that, but he's not that far behind them. And I think that he's a player that teams should definitely be taking a long look at when they're in the mid-range of the first round.
Chris Peters is an NHL draft expert. You can find all his great work at ESPN.com. Chris, always appreciate your time. Always appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Chris. When we come back, we talk about what the Winnipeg Jets should do with the 10th overall selection. It's a Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It is now time to see who the winning team is.
The first selection in the 2020 NHL draft belongs to the New York Rangers.
And with that announcement, Winnipeg Jets fans found out that they were going to be drafting 10th overall in the upcoming NHL draft. Complete draft coverage, of course, available here on TSN1290.ca, and we'll have it all covered, of course, as well on IllegalCurve.com.
See, you turned my mic off
because
now.
You can't get, for whatever reason.
I keep getting all twirled up and tangled up here.
It's remarkable. it's a trained monkey knows how to put on headphones better than Ezzy does. Even an untrained monkey. I don't even have to train the monkey, and he would do
me.
A better job. I have to mute you because otherwise people can hear you, you know, fetzing around with the headphones.
Fumbling and bumbling.
Fetzing. Yeah.
He's a Chris Berman.
Little
fumble and bumble.
He is a fumble and a bumble all wrapped up into one. Anyways, this segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. I shook hands with Frank. I shook hands with Mauro. Not literally. We don't shake hands anymore. But Frank, of course, is in the midst of selling my condo.
Nice.
So, you know, take it from, you know, we practice what we preach here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're not just full of hot air. If you need
that too.
But if you need somebody to help you with a real estate project, if you're in the buying market, if you're in the selling market, be sure to give the Zappia brothers a call. Zappia Group Realty, zappiagroup.com. talking about the NHL draft, of course, talking about the Jets at the 10th overall pick.
Yep.
I mean, you know, throughout this entire process, the lead up to this, I thought that was a pick that the Jets might not end up using. I thought they were going to trade it to really get that second line center that they've been looking for. Now, I'm a little less confident in that opinion because I think there's other ways for the Jets to acquire that second line center.
Could be an offer sheet.
Could be an offer sheet. Yep. Could be take advantage of another team's, you know, internal salary cap, meaning they can't hold on to a player that they previously would never have given up. I think that there's ways for the Jets to use their financial power to get that second line center without necessarily having to sacrifice that 10th overall pick.
Yeah.
But if they do keep it, who do you think they're going to target?
Well, yeah, and that's what everybody wants to know right around here in Winnipeg and Jets fans everywhere. And, you know, I kind of always looked at that 10th overall pick as kind of a, you know, a coin flip 50-50 whether or not Chevy's going to move that pick, because you're not moving that pick unless you're getting a really good player in return, like you said, right, Drew? So, I mean, we just talked to Chris Peters, you know, does a great job at ESPN, and, you know, the Jets are going to get a really good player. And, you know, I know that, you know, in previous years we've had Craig Button on, and we always ask him, you know, how does this year, you know, compare to other years? And he hates that question, right? Because you go back to 2015, which is considered, you know, the best draft class for the Jets scouting staff, right? Like when you have Connor, Roslovic, Harkins, I mean, Appleton, we know all these guys, right, that were drafted in that 2015 year. Sammy Niku, I didn't mention. But, like, not every year is 2015 when you have, you know, the Eichels and the McDavids and all these really good players available. But scouts do think the 2020 draft is much stronger, certainly than, you know, last year's 2019 draft, the Jack Hughes, you know, Kaapo Kakko draft. You know, so it's going to be really interesting to see the last couple, you know, two of the last three drafts. Jets took a defenseman, you know, in the first round, 2018. They, of course, you know, didn't have that first round pick. So that's what I would say. You know, the Jets traded a couple of first round picks, you know, at the deadline, and then obviously, you know, got one of them back. Mm-hmm. So that's why I would be a little hesitant to just assume, you know, that that first round pick is in play. Is there a chance that Chevy moves it? Like we said, of course there is, if, you know, you're going to address, you know, that second line center or get a top four defenseman. But, you know, when I look at some of those players available, you know, obviously, you know, if Jake Sanderson, pardon me, is available, you know, at 10th overall, you know, it looks like he's going to be a top pairing defenseman, as Chris Peters mentioned, so I think he would be a great pick for the Jets. You know, Jack Quinn is another guy that I think could be, you know, an option for the Jets there with the 10th overall pick. Jack Quinn, of course, a forward or a right winger, scored 52 goals for the Ottawa 67s, and I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, you know, he played with Marco Rossi, who's expected to also be a top 10 pick. He actually didn't play with Marco Rossi. He was on a different line. So Jack Quinn, you know, as a right winger, even though, you know, the Jets are pretty set there on right wing with, you know, Wheeler and Laine, you know, I still think Jack Quinn is an option for the Jets. And then, you know, if you want to get into other players, yeah, Anton Lundell, Dave, you know, Finnish centerman, you know, put up really good numbers in the Finnish league. Like, you're talking about elite numbers, you know, playing with men. Obviously, Lundell is known as a really good two-way forward, has a really good defensive part of his game. So I think Lundell could be an option. There's probably four or five guys that we could put out there, maybe even more. It also depends, you know, who's available. Mm-hmm. Like an Alexander Holtz is an elite scorer. Some people think he could go as high as 6th or 7th overall, but maybe, you know, at 6th or 7th overall, you know, the Devils or the Ducks take, you know, a guy like Jake Sanderson. So maybe, you know, a guy like Alexander Holtz falls to the Jets at 10. Maybe the Jets scouting staff doesn't like Holtz. I mean, we have no idea. So, you know, maybe you could put out, you know, 7 or 8 options there. But the point is the Jets are going to get a very good pick at 10. Mm-hmm. And based on their track record, you know, they usually nail their first round picks.
You know what? It's interesting because I was on board with Jake Sanderson for quite a while. I just thought he would fill quite the organizational need. I think that would really solidify for years to come. Obviously, you know, you're not thinking about next year. You're thinking about, you know, in the future. But to me, having listened to Chris Peters, like, Chris knows his stuff.
Yep.
Chris follows.
He really does.
Like, Chris is probably one of the best. And Cam Robinson also is another guy to follow.
Yep.
Those guys, if you want these guys watch it.
Yeah, they know.
Like, it's
stuff.
Easy for, it's more difficult when you're not watching these guys night in and night out. I can't say I watch these games. But when you talk to people who are experts, like these guys, like I can form an opinion based on what I read, but I don't have that in-depth knowledge because I'm not seeing these guys play the way these guys are. I was already on board with the Jake Sanderson pick, and that was before Chris Peters went on his answer to the question about Jake Sanderson. So to me, I think if you're the Jets,
you're buying stock in Jake Sanderson.
You are 100% buying stock. I mean, again, we talked about it. He's a kid from Montana.
Yep.
who is going to be playing at UND. So he's not afraid of the cold. He's not trying to get away from the weather on that he's used to, you know, in Montana or will he will be in North Dakota. So the reality is coming up to Winnipeg isn't going to be a huge thing for him.
Winnipeg's the big city at that point in time.
Well, but I mean, you know what I'm talking about from a weather perspective. Yeah. But, and again, don't get me wrong. Like, it's, you know, Florida's nice. But I'm just saying, like, you've got a guy who's born and bred who could develop within this system. That's, I think, your target. I think, and again, that's over and above all his elite-level play that everybody is talking about.
When we come back, we'll take a look at the Odd Shark inbox, and we'll touch on our UFAs of the week. They're Taylor Hall and Mike Hoffman. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number three up next on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk. It's time to check out the Odd Shark inbox presented by Odd Shark, your source for the latest odds from leading authorities. Find your edge at oddshark.net. Earlier in the show, we are asking people what they think the Jets needed in terms of a defenseman, a puck-moving defenseman, or a more stay-at-home physical defensive defenseman. YYJ Jets fan says, I think the answer depends on whether they need to add a player in order to make the playoffs or to succeed in the playoffs. To me, they need a puck mover to make the playoffs, but need more size to win in the playoffs, which is a pretty good answer, I gotta say.
Yep.
You know, got some layers to it, which is not something you typically get on Twitter. So kudos to YYJ Jets fan for giving a quality answer there. Indica says the Jets miss Buff and it shows, and I don't think anybody would argue with that. I don't think that's what I would describe as a controversial opinion. Going back to hour number one, talking about Patrick Laine, Corey says you guys are correct. Any team trading for Laine will already have taken into consideration future salary. That does limit the trade partners, though. And really, throughout the course of the week, we've been getting a lot of feedback on our segment that we did last week on Click, the canned meat, which, of course, is surprised that it has garnered this amount of feedback. Bobby chimes in. This is from yesterday on Twitter. If I miss the Illegal Curve show on Saturday, I usually catch it on the podcast. I never worry about missing the live interactions because my takes aren't that hot. But last night, while cutting the grass, I realized I missed a segment that I could have really contributed to, in all caps, so you know the man is being serious. Click is horrific. So there you go.
That spawned quite the conversation as a result.
Then Ezzy chimed in, and will Ezzy be allowed to bring Click into Dave's house? Dave, of course, keeping kosher, and Dave, you know, I think it's hard enough for Dave to let Ezzy in the house, never mind any Click.
I don't think it has anything to do with Dave being kosher. Yeah, I don't think Dave wants that in his house because it sounds like it could be a little little greasy.
Dave M. Don't dig on pig, and I don't dine on swine.
And then somebody else named Mitch chimes in criticizing Bobby, saying, I believe you misspelled delicious. So, and then
Click
Bobby.
I think we're actually going to turn the Illegal Curve Click show next week.
It's actually getting out of control. And then Bobby was back saying, you slice and fry it up, as is the Franco tradition. I didn't realize there was tradition associated with Click. And then Mitch responds with a fried egg and cheese, it makes for one good damn sandwich.
Are you really reading a Click Twitter interaction?
It's fantastic.
I gotta be honest, I kind of want to try it. Like, I've never had spam. I was at 7-Eleven this morning, and that's obviously where I do all my grocery shopping.
It's true.
And they have spam there. But there's no Click, so I don't know how readily available Click is. Like, I don't know if you have to go to, like,
they have things nowadays called grocery stores where you can find probably an ample supply of canned meat.
Why do I have a feeling Ezzy's going to get in the mail, like, Click, like, nonstop Click?
Like, he's now the representative of Click.
I would love to be sponsored by Click, but Drew, I don't, like, first of all, Naomi does all the grocery shopping in our family, so I don't think Naomi's going to like it when I write Click on the grocery list instead of, like, food for my kids.
Naomi knew what she was getting when she married you.
She would think you wanted her to pick up the Adam Sandler movie.
There's an Adam Sandler movie called Click?
Yeah, it's an amazing movie. Are you serious? With the remote? pauses things, moves things forward.
You have
He's a busy architect.
You have the most esoteric movie watching. Most of them happen
about...
If
the movie Click is esoteric, yeah. I don't know what kind of movies watched, Drew.
Yeah,
Click isn't
Kate
esoteric.
Kate Beckinsale's in it. Come on, it's a classic.
I'm not sure about classic, but don't
take
your word
for that. Define esoteric.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Knowledge possessed by a few.
Facebook, is that really the definition?
Yes.
Nicely done. How'd you get that so quickly? What are you, a Webster, Merriam-Webster over
here? I read books.
You read books? Facebook and Instagram posts, your texts, your tweets. Bob Woodward's going to write a book about you just to see if you write good, somebody down south.
Yeah.
Facebook and Instagram posts, your texts, your tweets. We find them in the Odds Shark inbox. And remember, oddshark.net is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Find your edge at oddshark.net. So we're going to talk about our UFAs of the week, this segment. I mentioned them. It's going to be Mike Hoffman, ex of the Florida Panthers, or I guess he potentially could stay there, but time will tell, and Taylor Hall of the Arizona Coyotes. Here's what Taylor Hall had to say about his time in Arizona.
Getting a chance to spend time in Arizona and to join a new team was really fun. It's a great group of guys, and I thought the coaching staff was awesome to work with. So I look at it from a positive light. Obviously, it would have been nice to have more success against Colorado. But, you know, for me personally, I was able to get some experience that I wouldn't have had previously, and I'm grateful for that.
That's Taylor Hall in the end-of-season interview with the Coyotes media. You know, Taylor Hall's coming off a pretty good contract. He signed it 7 years ago, so it's been a long time. He was still a young pup playing in the Edmonton Oilers organization at that point in time. 7 years, $42 million. And remember, he went to New Jersey, and that's where he won the Hart Trophy a couple years ago. He hasn't been that same player. You know, last year was injury riddled. This year he bounced between New Jersey and Arizona, and he was a little less than a point a game player for those two teams this season. You know, what are you comfortable giving a player like Taylor Hall? He's going to be 29 years old in November. So a couple months from now, I guess before the next season begins, he's going to be 29 years old. Are you comfortable giving him 7 years, or is that too much? I can sort of see it in your eyes, Ezzy, that you're a little cringing at that, and that's not the Click talking.
No, exactly. Well, especially, no, but, you know, when we talked about, you know, the uncertainty with teams and their internal salary cap structure, right?
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's why I don't know if you want to back up the Brinks truck and give him, you know, 7 years, $49 million, or, you know, 7 years, $53 million. Like, I haven't crunched the numbers, but you got to think that he's going to be probably around $7 to $8 million a year, right, Dave? And you know, to me, you know, you mentioned the Hart Trophy season when he had, you know, 90 plus points. That was, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
I don't think you can expect Taylor Hall to kind of be in that, you know, 85 to 95 point range every year. Like, mm-hmm. to me, at this point in his career, you mentioned, you know, he's not getting younger. You know, he's still a really good player, but, you know, to me, you know, Hall's more of kind of a 60 to 70 point left winger.
That 93 point season, it looks like an outlier more than anything else.
No, it's absolutely an outlier, Drew. And, you know, you go from Edmonton, we know, you know, the issues that, you know, Hall had in Edmonton. You go to New Jersey, it was a perfect fit. Right? Like, it was like, here are the keys to the city for you, Taylor. He mm-hmm. ran the show in New Jersey, right? And so, like I said, I don't think, you know, Taylor Hall is, you know, that elite left winger that he maybe was 3 or 4 years ago. He's still really good. Like, I would argue that, you know, he, at the very least, Hall is a top 20 left winger, maybe even top 15. I just wouldn't put him in that, you know, elite mm-hmm. category. So, I guess that is pretty elite, but all I'm saying is, you know, he's more of a 70, 75 point guy. But what I think is the most important about Hall and why I would be a little reticent is because, you know, he does have his defensive drawbacks. He's mm-hmm. not a great defensive player. Like, Hall is a guy who does his damage. Yeah, he can score at 5-on-5. He does his damage on the power play. But this isn't a guy that's going to, you know, be a great penalty killer. He's not, you know, a Sean Couturier or, you know, a Patrice Bergeron here. This guy is an offensive first type of player. So that's why, you know, I would be a little hesitant, you know, to give him, you know, 6 or 7 years. Is there a team that would do that? Maybe. But I would be much more comfortable with a 4 or 5 year deal. But I think someone is going to overpay because there aren't, I mean, you think that these guys grow on trees, but the 70 to 75 point guys, they don't grow on trees.
Mm-hmm.
So a team like Colorado, I've mentioned this to you guys before off air, like there's been a lot of talk that, you know, Joey Sakic, with all of his cap space, might go out and acquire Taylor Hall.
You call him Joey?
Well,
that's only when he phones Ezzy on the phone.
Yeah, exactly. Burnaby Joe. You know, there, you look at Hall and you say, well, he could be a great second liner with Nazem Kadri, and they've had Andrei Burakovsky there on the right side of that second line, right, yeah. Dave? So for me, you know, Taylor Hall is a very good second line left winger. I don't know, you know, if you would call him like an elite left,
right,
first line left winger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can obviously play on the first line. That's all I'm saying. In Arizona, I think, you know, at times maybe they were expecting a little bit too much out of Taylor Hall. Like, they were looking for that, you know, 90-point guy, which he just isn't anymore. Like Drew said, you know, he's just below a point a game, but, you know, that puts him somewhere around, like, a 70-point guy, which is excellent. All I'm saying is $7 to $8 million to me is a lot of money to give a guy who's, you know, past his prime.
And that's the biggest mistake that we see teams making year after year after year, and it's like, it's literally the definition of insanity. You just keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. It's like, you can't give these guys who are already past their prime, have had serious injuries.
Yep.
You've got to be careful, and you can't really afford to, I mean, again, you can overpay. Look, if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins, I'm not saying Pittsburgh Penguins for Taylor Hall. I'm just using them as an example. If you're a win now team, if you're a team that literally wants to win next year or the year after, and you can afford, you have the room, then you go out and get it a Hall because, you know what, you're in a win-now mode. But, you know, and it's interesting because when I asked Sean Tierney about Hall, I wasn't specifically obviously asking about him for Winnipeg.
Right.
But I think Sean interpreted that. But, you know, just to hear what Sean's answer was in response to that was, well, he wouldn't be a good fit because he's not defensively responsible, which is something the Jets would need.
Well, every team wants their players to be defensively responsible.
For sure, but what I'm suggesting is that other teams who don't necessarily have scoring, could maybe make up with that defensive structure that would allow for Hall to be have his offensive ability,
sure,
and make up for his shortcomings.
Sure.
So I think that's the point that I'm looking at. I'm not looking at a team saying we want Taylor Hall for 6 or 7 years. And I really think, like, with the cap situation and with the COVID, you know, impact on the league, I don't know that we're going to be seeing. You know, this might be a bad year to be a UFA. Because I don't necessarily expect teams to be handing out 7-8 year deals to these UFAs. Like, maybe a Pietrangelo is a little different story, but, you know, again, you're getting guys who are, you know, there's not many players like Blake Wheeler, for example, who reach it after that, you know, 26, 27 and start to really kind of come into their own and put up 90 point seasons.
Sure.
So you generally don't have that. That's the exception to the rule. Generally, these guys start to downgrade. So to Ezzie's point, could Taylor Hall look fantastic in Colorado? Absolutely. But, you know, I don't know that there's too many teams outside of, you know, the Avs that are really going to have the space and the availability to do that.
Well, and it's one thing to, you know, talk about the cap space, and, you know, there are other teams that have the cap space. The Jets are obviously one of them, but nobody thinks that Taylor Hall is coming to Winnipeg. It just doesn't make any sense. But, you know, another team, you know, that's been talked about, but they're not exactly a win-now team, is the LA Kings, right? Like, to me, Taylor Hall would look great on the LA Kings. He would look good. Another, you know, team that I was thinking about was the Nashville Predators, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they've had trouble scoring goals. The Predators had a bottom five power play during the regular season. It was better in the playoffs, but, you know, to me, I look at a guy like Taylor Hall, and, you know, he would probably look pretty good on the first line with Ryan Johansson or on the second line with Matt Duchene.
What about the team like the New York Islanders? You know, there's the familiarity, given that he was in New Jersey the last couple seasons. The Islanders, you know, you'd say that their biggest weakness is offense, is goal scoring. They're probably looking to make a big splash as they're getting set to enter a new arena. I believe it's next season or the year after.
Yeah.
I mean, that could make some sense to me as well, depending on,
well,
you
especially,
know,
like I said, that's the idea, right? You're going to have a team that's,
they already have the structure
is going to be able to account for a player who is weak in that area, but can add some offense to them.
Yeah. I mean, they're not typically a destination necessarily for free agents, but, you know, some players have gone there, and, you know, you can imagine a situation where, you know, where Taylor Hall is playing with a guy like Matt Barzal or something like that. Now, they have to sign Barzal to, he's an RFA this season,
yeah.
So maybe that takes them out of the running given the salary situation and things of that nature.
Yeah, no, I mean, Hall would look great on the Islanders. Another team that, you know, isn't exactly, you know, the best offensive team in the league. They're a decent offensive team. And there's also the Jordan Eberle connection there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Former buddies in Edmonton, right?
So let's reunite the 2015 well, Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, right? So, yeah, I think we could easily come up with a list, guys, of, I don't know, 10 teams, 15 teams that, you know, would look good with Taylor Hall. I think it goes back to what Dave said. I think Dave made a really good point that I don't think you know, signing Taylor Hall, it's never going to be, you know, a bad signing in the first or second year.
Yeah.
But if you sign him to 5 or 6 years and you give him, you know, $7 to $8 million a year, which, you know, is what we're being told Hall's going to command. His agent, is it Darren Ferris?
I think it's Darren Ferris.
Taylor
yeah.
Hall's agent. He's going to get big boy money. I mean, you're not going to get Hall for $4 million a year, right? So whoever gives him that money, first year of the contract, second year of the contract, that's not an issue, even the third year. But in the fourth or fifth year, if you're paying him $8 million a year and he's only putting up 50 points, that's when you're going to regret it, right?
No question about it. Obviously not enough time to get to Mike Hoffman. Maybe we'll do Mike Hoffman next week when we resume our UFA of the Week feature. But when we come back, we'll spend some time talking about the Western Conference Final. The surprising to most people, not Dave Minuk, Dallas Stars are up 2-1 on the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll talk about the West Final up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ben quickly up the left wing, pass across for Radulov to the right circle, moves it and shoots. He scores! 31 seconds into overtime. Alexander Radulov wins game 3 for the Dallas Stars with his second overtime goal during the 2020 Stanley Cup playoffs in Edmonton.
It was no laughing matter for fans of the Vegas Golden Knights. Alex Radulov's goal early in overtime in Game 3 gives the Stars a surprising 2-1 series lead over the Knights of Las Vegas. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. He's been here all week, completely sold out. Thank you, Winnipeg. Jeremy Hotz, legendary comedian. You know him from TV. You know him from movies. He's performing at Rumors tonight, his final night in town. Like I said, tickets completely sold out. But next week, Tim Nutt, who is tremendously funny. I've seen Tim on a number of different occasions. You can get your tickets to see Tim at RumorsComedyClub.com. Get them now because most of the shows do sell out. That's RumorsComedyClub.com.
Tim Nutt's middle name, of course, is Chest.
I was like, where is he going with this? I thought it was
You know what? It could have been a lot worse, really, yeah. Considering where he could have gone with that. That was appropriate.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He could have gone with D's. He could have gone with Harry. There's a lot of things.
Well,
that,
you just took it now.
I took it to that next level.
I had no point was going there, Drew. Get your mind out of the gutter, man.
I was thinking peanut, but holy moly, Drew, you just went. You took it to that next level.
What can I say? I like to work blue every now and then. You know, the show gets a little bit hairy, if you will, at the 11:30 hour, 11:25 hour. Yeah, not for long. Exactly. Soon enough, we'll be manscaped. Anyways, let's talk about the Western Conference Final. The Golden Knights trailing the Dallas Stars 2-1 based on the back of Anton Khudobin and him standing on his head, even though it looked seriously like he was injured in that third period on, I guess that would have been, Thursday night before tonight's game four in that series. You know, how long can the Dallas Stars keep relying on Anton Khudobin before eventually they get their comeuppance from the Vegas Golden Knights?
Yeah, exactly right, Drew. And, you know, you watch that third period, right? So the shots in the third period, I think, were 18-4, if I'm not mistaken.
Seems healthy.
And the first period was lopsided as well. And, you know, the Dallas Stars, you know, they're a great hockey team. But, you know, Anton Khudobin stole that game. Like, flat out, he stole that game. And, you know, I think it has a lot to do with how his groin's doing. Some of those saves, like that save that he made on Riley Smith in the third period, and then he made that save in tight, you know, on Mark Stone, like, Khudobin was so good and has been so good, you know, throughout the playoffs. And obviously, you know, Ben Bishop is not an option here. So if you have to go to Jake Oettinger, I mean, that's an issue, right? Like, I'm not saying that he's not a good goalie, but Oettinger can't come in there and, you know, give you, what did he have, 38 saves, Khudobin, in the second.
Oettinger just doesn't have any experience.
Well, that too, but, you know, Khudobin has been just so good, but it's more so you know, not just that Khudobin stole the game, which is obviously, you know, a big part of it. And you got to give Alex Radulov a lot of credit. Like that shot,
that shot.
I mean, I watched that replay at least three or four times. That was a beautiful goal. And you know, you have to. Jamie Benn has been really good in the series, guys, because you know he was criticized quite a bit earlier in the playoffs. You know, and you know, Sagan has still you know not found his goal scoring touch, unfortunately. But you know, Radulov is a guy that also wasn't scoring earlier in the playoffs. So you know, that's a positive sign for Rick Bowness and the Stars, but. You know, throughout the playoffs, you're getting hat tricks from Denis Gurianov. You're getting, you know, Joel Kiviranta getting a, you know, a hat trick in Game 7 of the series against Colorado. But,
Didn't Oleksiak score?
Well, Jamie Oleksiak, and that was another beautiful goal, right? Yeah. Like a breakaway goal, you know, jumping up into the play. But the advanced stats, the expected goals, the shots, the control of play, I mean, the, you know, the money puck, you know, who deserves to win the game. I mean, Vegas has deserved to win every single one of these games, maybe not so much game one, but game two and game three. I mean, Vegas has been absolutely controlling, you know, the pace of play, Dave, and has had so many good chances. Shea Theodore just continues, you know, to have a coming out party in these playoffs. He's been fantastic. You know, Riley Smith, Jonathan Marchessault is a guy that hasn't been, you know, as good, but, you know, when you look at, you know, Max Pacioretty and Paul Stastny and, you know, go up and down the lineup, Nicholas Roy is a guy that's really impressed me. You know, the Golden Knights are still very much in this series. And one thing we should also mention, you know, the team that scores the first goal has won every game. So obviously if Dallas goes up 1-0, you have to, you know, just turn the TV off and stop watching the game. But no, I mean, this is a series here, boys. This is very even though, you know, Vegas should probably be up 2-1 instead of being down 2-1.
Well, and you know, a Dallas team that probably feels a little bit like they're playing with house money through these first three games, and maybe that allows them to play even a little bit more loose, and maybe the Golden Knights get a little bit tight as a result. Although, you know, the Golden Knights have been there before, which this Dallas team, you know, has got playoff experience on them, but you have to wonder, you have to think that the Golden Knights, you know, getting to the Stanley Cup Finals a couple of years ago, and then, you know, the controversial way that they were eliminated out of the playoffs last year, you wonder if that eventually gets them the motivation to pull out these victories that they, to Ezzy's point, you know, quote unquote, should have thus far.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, unless you're down 3-1, you're not going to be clutching your sticks because these guys have, quote, been there, done that. And I think these guys have the requisite knowledge and hockey experience to be, and, you know, again, to the points you both have just made, they've shown that they've controlled the play. And really, without the play of Anton Khudobin, like, really, is Dallas in this series? Now, on the flip side, if you're the Dallas Stars, and as you just touched on this a little bit, you know, maybe what you're looking towards is like our big boys haven't even really begun. So if our big boys actually get started, you know, then we've got something to say. Now, of course, the reality being, well, they haven't yet. And with Vegas dictating play, they're going to have to break out in a big way. So, you know, you can't rest on your goalie forever because eventually the dam does break. So to me, it really isn't incumbent on, you know, Ben and Sagan and Radulov, those guys have to really get their games to that next level to ensure that Dallas can take a commanding lead.
You know, Dave, one guy I didn't mention, which, you know, I'm a big fan of, Alex Tuch doesn't have any goals in the first three games of this series, but he's got 8 goals in the playoffs. So he's another guy that I think is due. He had some good scoring chances in game 3. I just think Vegas just has more skill, you know, up front. And obviously, you know, Khudobin has outplayed Leonard a little bit, even though, you know, Leonard had a shutout in game 2. But, you know, I absolutely think, you know, the Golden Knights are going to make this a series. I don't think Dallas is winning this series in 5 games. But another thing we should mention, too, this is the first time Vegas has been down in a series. You remember, Canucks tied the series up with Vegas, but, you know, that Chicago series was a joke.
Yeah.
So this is the first time they've been down. So this is the first time they've had real adversity here.
Exactly. You mentioned about the dam breaking. We hope it's not the Hoover Dam because we'll head out to Vegas next where Justin Emerson of the Las Vegas Sun is going to join us to talk about the Western Conference Final. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number 3. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. Quick update from the NFL if you're a Vikings fan. Dalvin Cook signing a big contract extension. going to keep him in Minnesota Vikings colors going forward. 5 years, $63 million for the linchpin of the Minnesota Vikings offense. Running back Dalvin Cook signing a long-term extension. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, and of course our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Las Vegas Sun, he covers the Vegas Golden Knights. We're pleased to be joined on the program by Justin Emerson. Justin, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Good morning. Happy to be here. Yeah, I'm happy to talk some hockey. Big game tonight.
Yes, exactly. A very big game tonight. Game four between the Stars and the Golden Knights. The Stars taking that 2-1 series lead on that wicked overtime winner from Alex Radulov on Thursday night. You know, Justin, as the Golden Knights sit here trailing 2-1, do you get the impression that maybe they're feeling a little bit snake bit? They've controlled most of the action for most of these games. They've probably been the better team overall than the Stars are, yet they trail by that 2-1 margin.
Yeah, I think snake bit's a great word for it. And I think that goes back even to the Vancouver series. You looked at game 5, 6, and 7 of that, and they dominated play, but Thatcher Demko played unbelievably for the Canucks, and they only managed to beat him twice, I think. So, yeah, no, and that's kind of carried over into the Stars series. They've only scored they've scored 5 goals now in the 3 games. They were shut out in the first night, but yeah, I think that's a great word. I think they had like 37 shot attempts or something in the third period alone on Thursday, and only beat Khudobin a couple of times. And of course, like you said, the overtime winner ended it. So, no, if I'm the Golden Knights, you're starting to feel a little bit of pressure, obviously, because you're 2 losses away from heading home, but as far as 2-1 deficits go, I think you got to be feeling at least kind of good about yourself right now.
You know, Justin, right before we had you on, we were talking about that Golden Knights Stars series, and you know, obviously there have been, you know, many players that have been impressive for the Golden Knights, and there's no shortage of offensive firepower. And Alex Tuck, to me, you know, is a player that I'm sure that, you know, you've been talking about and writing about a lot here during these playoffs. Doesn't have any goals yet in the Stars series, but I thought he was really noticeable in Game 3. If you had to pick, you know, one player that is probably going to find himself on the score sheet in a big way, would Tuck be that guy?
Tuck's definitely one of those guys for sure. The way that he played in especially the first 2 rounds of the playoffs against the Blackhawks and Canucks, he was at times their best player, and he's got that kind of devastating combination of size and speed that makes him tough to game plan for, especially when he plays on the third line and he's going against, you know, fifth and sixth defensemen. There's just very few of them in the league can really match with a player like Tuck, and the Blackhawks and Canucks didn't have that forward depth to match with him either, so he kind of just ran wild, and the Stars are obviously a better defensive team, better structured, so they've managed to rein him in a little bit, but you're right. No, he looked really good in Game 3, and yeah, Tuck's been for sure one of the breakout stars for the Golden Knights, at least among their forward group.
You know, Justin, one of the things that teams try to do in the playoffs is minimize distractions, but you know, a report came out that Robin Leonard had agreed to a 5-year contract extension with the Golden Knights, seemed to kind of catch fire and start, you know, forcing him to answer those types of questions. How has the team managed to kind of, or how has he managed to try and get away from that controversy, if you will?
It's funny, because as far as distractions go, the Golden Knights have had no shortage of them this postseason. Yeah. They had, of course, Fleury's agent's tweet with the sword in his back with the Boar's name on it. And then Jonathan Marchessault, after one game, had to address some Instagram comments that he made out of frustration. And then there was, like you said, the Leonard extension report, and it hasn't seemed to bother him. I mean, they rolled through the Blackhawks pretty good. If it weren't for Thatcher Demko, they probably would have finished off the Canucks in 5 games. They're down in the Stars series, but I wouldn't necessarily think that any distractions are because of that. They've had so many chances to have a distraction kind of derail this team, and they like to talk about outside noise a lot. And I've been really impressed how they've managed to not let all that outside stuff kind of affect their play on the ice. And, I mean, you've seen it so far. Leonard's kind of been the center of a lot of this, and he's had a tremendous postseason. So as far as pushing out distractions, yeah, it's been impressive how they've managed to not let it affect them.
Justin Emerson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Justin covers the Golden Knights for the Las Vegas Sun. You know, Justin, for a guy who's got 4 assists in the playoffs in 17 games, he's got 0 goals. Ryan Reeves certainly collects his fair share of ink. Do we put too much emphasis and maybe exaggerate the actual impact that he has on a game-to-game basis?
I personally do think so. Like, he's gotten a lot of ink, like you said, a lot of airtime. They love to talk about Ryan Reeves. And, of course, he's an electrifying guy. He's a lot of fun to talk to. He's fun to watch on the ice. And I think that his kind of brand of physical play does impact games at times. I think in game 1 against the Canucks series was a great example. He was in the Canucks' head, and that was a lot of the reason that the Golden Knights won that game. But if you look at some of the on-ice numbers, his line with William Carrier and a revolving centerman has been good, okay, during the Chicago-Vancouver series, but Dallas has that fourth line kind of scoring depth that has been able to make that fourth line kind of a non-factor. So they've been physical, yes, but I personally think that Reeves' contributions have been maybe a tad exaggerated, but that goes to a lot of you're not in the room, you don't know how the players kind of feel about him kind of thing. So I don't necessarily understand it, but the Golden Knights definitely place a large value on Reeves for sure.
You know, Justin, I can't believe it's been, you know, this long into the interview and we haven't asked you about Shea Theodore. And I have to admit, I have a man crush on Theodore. I mean, the way he's playing, I mean, he's clearly a top 20, maybe even, you know, top 10 defenseman in the NHL. Scored a big goal in game 3 versus Dallas. He's up to 7 goals and 18 points, I think in 18 games for the Golden Knights in these playoffs. I mean, what else can you say about Theodore that hasn't been said already? I mean, is it possible that, you know, he could be even better in these playoffs? Because as far as I'm concerned, you know, watching those, you know, change up wrist shots from the point, I mean, that's art.
I was trying to come up yesterday with, I'm like, okay, what angle am I going to go with for my game preview? I'm like, oh man, Shea Theodore played really well. There's a lot of talk about Shea Theodore a dozen times already this postseason. You're right, he's been unbelievable. He's always been that guy that the Golden Knights have believed could be this player. I think Shea Theodore and his potential development is the reason the Golden Knights had never gone out and acquired that top number one defenseman. They were linked to Erik Karlsson a few years ago, and their name had been floated around for Alex Pietrangelo making a run at him this summer. But I think Theodore is developing into that player that you don't need to go out and get a number one defenseman because you already have one. His offensive play has always been good. He's taken it to a new level in the defensive end this postseason. And, I mean, on the power play, he is the Golden Knights offense. It runs through him. They've scored 11 power play goals this postseason, and he's got a point in 8 of them. He's been on the ice for 6 of the last 7 goals overall against a goalie, non-empty netter. So he's been the offense for about 2 weeks now. And, yeah, his man crush is a good way of putting it because when he's on his game, there are a few more exciting players on the Golden Knights than, quite honestly, throughout the conference and the league.
You know, Justin, the playoffs are usually such a big moneymaker for teams and for the ownership. And of course, obviously, with things being in the bubble, no fans, it's different. But, you know, one thing I was reading about in your paper, and I thought it was rather interesting, and I don't know if other teams are doing this, is that the Golden Knights are renting out T-Mobile Arena suites for fans to watch playoff games. I think it's about $2,000 to have 10 people come and watch the game. And I think that's fantastic. And I think, if I read it correctly, I think for tonight's game, it's a complete sellout. Again, I don't know how many boxes that qualifies for, but I mean that's a pretty innovative move by this Golden Knights team, which, you know, again seems to kind of be at the forefront of a lot of innovation in the NHL.
Yeah, you've seen a lot of the Golden Knights have really managed to tap into that, the fan support here in the area, and it's been a city, it's a big city, it's not a small town, and it's their first professional sports team. So this city's waited 100 years for a professional sports team, and once they got one, they've really locked onto the Golden Knights. And the Golden Knights credit have done as much as they could to keep fans involved throughout this entire bubble process. Like you said, they did they're selling out the suites, and you're right, the games are sold out for tonight, all the suites at T-Mobile Arena, and they've had virtual watch parties like a lot of other teams are doing. But yeah, they're doing a good job, I think, of trying to keep the fans as involved as possible. And it's really cool to see when a community rallies behind a team. And I wouldn't say I've necessarily seen it the way that it was when they went to the Stanley Cup final 2 years ago, but in fairness, I've also been in my house for the last 6 months, so I haven't been out in the community as much.
Yes, 2020 has thrown us all for a bit of a curveball. Justin Emerson of the Las Vegas Sun is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Justin, last one for you. Paul Stastny is going to be a UFA when these playoffs come to an end. You know, he's got 7 points in 16 games so far. Do they need more from him in these playoffs, given the power play time? I think he's got 2 assists and no goals on the power play. Do they need more from Paul Stastny?
Well, Stastny's got 1 more year after this one. He's a free agent.
Sorry,
this summer. But
you're right. I'm reading cap friendly wrong. You're right.
No problem. But to answer your question, yeah, I think maybe a little bit. They need a little bit more from, I think, a lot of their star players. Jonathan Marchessault, Riley Smith are in a bit of a scoring drought themselves, and it had been a while for William Karlsson before he netted one in game two. So, yeah, I think that that goes back to what we were talking about with Shea Theodore. He's been a lot of the offense so far and kind of making up for a lot of deficiencies maybe from the forward group. And Paul Stastny's a guy who had a pretty good season for the Golden Knights, and he's been really good for 2 years, had a good postseason last year. But you're right, I think that he'll be one of the first to tell you that maybe he needs to step it up a little bit, as do a lot of them. That's not just to pick on Paul by any means, but the Golden Knights definitely need some sort of offensive boost, and I think the power play is a good place to look, where they are 2-for-14 in the series so far against the Stars.
Well, the timeliness would be tonight to start getting some power play goals going, as Anton Khudobin has certainly stood on his head through the first 3 games of this series. Justin Emerson covers the Golden Knights for the Las Vegas Sun. Justin, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Enjoy covering tonight's game four between the Golden Knights and the Stars, and thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Justin. When we come back, we look at the Conn Smythe Trophy and who we think the favorites are through the first 2.5 rounds of the Stanley Cup playoffs. One segment to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hey, Miro, what are you learning from all these close games and overtimes? You're still a young guy, but seems like you're becoming more calm as the playoffs go on.
Oh yeah, I mean, I like to be on the ice in every situation. It's good. It's nice to play tight games, and it's always nice to stay much on the ice. So yeah, I enjoy that and try doing my best there every time I'm on the ice.
Our buddy Mike Heike of DallasStars.com with the question, Miro Heiskanen with the answer. The Dallas Stars enjoy having him on the ice all the time, as well as much as Miro enjoys being on the ice. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. A quick programming note. Next week, there will be no show. It is Rosh Hashanah, which for those of you wondering why I'm speaking in tongues now, that's Hebrew for the Jewish New Year. So we'll be celebrating that next Saturday. So we'll see you 2 weeks from today, the 26th of September, where we will be in the midst of the Stanley Cup Final and be that much closer, of course, to the NHL draft and to the start of free agency. So again, no show next Saturday. Check out the archives if you need your dose of Saturday morning IC content. There's some great archives there. You can look back at any of the former escapades that we have played on the show.
All the way back to the beginning.
All the way back to the beginning. That's, going back a lot of years now, what, 13 years or so with this fine program.
Those were some dark times.
Well, I mean,
actually, the lightning kick was pretty good.
Yeah, that's true. The lighting was pretty good. But anyways, no show next Saturday, but we'll be back with you 2 weeks from today.
Excited to dip a little apples and honey, for sure.
Yeah, that's always a nice tradition to ring in the sweet new year. That'll be, what year is it, Dave? I'm looking at you for this one. You got nothing, eh?
Between 5,000 and 6,000.
Thank you, Dave. Aren't we close to 57 something?
Call it 5,500.
Yeah.
Anyways, there you go. The Conn Smythe Trophy.
Yeah.
You know, we were saying off air,
can Nathan MacKinnon win it after two rounds?
It was a good question. I was going to ask that. But, you can't have that conversation after round one. You can't really have that conversation after round two. But now that we're sort of comfortable halfway through round three, it's a conversation we can begin to have. And, we heard from Miro Heiskanen off the top of the, off the segment here. And I think he's certainly right up at the top of the list of the candidates. You got the Braden Points. You got the Nikita Kucherovs. But if the Dallas Stars are able to get by the big Vegas Golden Knights, and if they're able to make it to the Stanley Cup final, you have to think that Heiskanen is right at the top of the list, probably the best candidate to come out of the Dallas Stars organization, Dallas Stars team, right now for the Conn Smythe Trophy.
Yeah, Jamie Benn's been pretty good, and Anton Hudobin's been a great story, but, you know, for me, if we are picking it today, and obviously, you know, it's not selected after 2.5 rounds, I'm going Miro Heiskanen, guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been incredible what he's been doing. I mean, 22 points, 17 assists. You know, he's playing, what is he playing, average 25 minutes, 26 minutes a game,
25
right?
minutes, there 40 seconds.
There you go. Just incredible, you know, the potential for this guy. I mean, I think none of us would be surprised if Heiskanen wins a Norris Trophy. But, you know, speaking of Heiskanen, yeah. I mean, Cale Makar, Quinn Hughes, Shea Theodore. I mean, we've been really, it's been a treat to watch with some of these young defensemen. Obviously, Theodore is, you know, a little bit older, 25, but certainly Heiskanen has been, you know, the best of the bunch and a huge reason why Dallas has gone this far. I mean, for me, Braden Point, as you mentioned, Kucherov, they have to be in the discussion. I mean, doesn't Robin Lehner also have to be in the discussion? I mean, he's got 4 shutouts.
Yeah.
Just incredible, you know, what he's done for the Golden Knights. A lot of it's obviously going to have to do with, you know, if the Golden Knights get to the Stanley Cup final, it's very rare, you know, that a guy's going to be in the Conn Smythe discussion based on, you know, just 3 rounds. But, you know, I think Robin Lehner has to be in the discussion. And, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the Islanders, I mean, it's maybe not as easy to pick one or two players, but, you know, Matthew Barzal's been incredible. You know, J.G. Pageau's been incredible. But
Josh Bailey leads them in scoring with 19 points so far in 19 games played for the Isles.
So maybe it's Bailey. There just isn't one guy that necessarily...
Yeah, they're a collective team.
They're a collective group, right? And obviously, you know, the goaltending has, you know, been split between Varlamov and Grace, with Varlamov getting the net now. But it's wide open. It's just a fun discussion to have, right? Because at this point, I mean, you're watching some great individual performances, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the Heiskanens and the Kucherovs and, you know, the Jamie Benn points. So, you know, it's turned out to be a great playoffs because, as I mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago, Drew, the first round was a little bit disappointing for me, but the second round and the conference finals, in my opinion, the hockey's been great.
It's 57-81, Leon via text letting us know and wishing us a happy new year. So thank you, Leon, for that, reminding us of what year it's going to be. Quickly, Dave, how did Connor Hellebuck get Lady Bing votes?
Oh, I don't vote, so I have no idea.
That was the most bizarre thing of the week. Connor Hellebuck getting Lady Bing votes, multiple.
Well, I mean, he's...
Has a goalie ever been in the running for the Lady Bing? Like, what was going on there? I'd love to know who the... I mean, we don't know. They released the ballots, but we don't know exactly who voted for whom. But that one was the one that jumped out at me earlier this week. And I think everyone said, really? Was that a typo? Did somebody... You know, was this a hanging ballot? Was this a hanging Chad from Florida going back to
he's
the...
He's pretty sportsmanlike. I mean, I don't have a problem with him. You know, I mean, he talks to a lot of players, a lot of people. Maybe, you know, he made an impression.
Well, it doesn't bother me. I mean, it's just odd.
I don't recall him taking any penalties this year. No. Maybe people felt that he was in the running.
Well, there you go. Was it you?
It wasn't me. I don't vote.
Okay, there you go. That's it for this Saturday morning and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guest, Justin Emerson of the Las Vegas Sun. We are joined by Chris Peters of ESPN.com, Sean Tierney from ChartingHockey.ca, and way back in hour number one, Matt Bensel of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your best podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big props to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big thank you to Sean Asor back at the station doing a great job. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Minuke, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.